Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures. And it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you. This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. It's never an easy call with so many problems in the world to know where to direct the money that you donate when you want to help out in this world. But what I can tell you is that when you donate to CAMH, you're saving lives. We know about the opioid crisis. We know about the mental health crisis. They are doing the work. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at camh.ca/CanadaLand to help us treat addiction and build hope.
No one's going to want to listen to anything I have to say while I'm eating pizza.
People leave Canada and people leave journalism. And one of my favorite people left both. Catherine Burrell Jr., I met her when she was a CBC radio producer, and she later wrote this book, a comic memoir called Corked. And then she moved to Hollywood. She went there to write television shows. She sold a couple of them. She's hoping they get made. She went to live with her boyfriend, another person I like a lot, another person who left Canada. His name's Graham Wagner, and he was an improv comedy guy here. Over there, he was a writer for shows like The Office and Portlandia, and he's got other stuff coming. So I went down there recently, hanging out with them at their place in Silver Lake, sleeping on their couch. I bought them a pizza and some wine at Trader Joe's, and we got into it. And I got all up in Catherine's business, and you're going to hear that in a minute. Catherine today, Graham later, came home and got this cold. This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We hear a lot about the opioid crisis. We talk a lot about the mental health crisis. These are serious problems. These problems affect us all. They've affected my life and my community. They're not intractable problems. I don't know what's going to solve them on a policy level, but day to day, helping people, that's what CAMH does. They do it on the ground when people need help, and they do it through research. The team at CAMH gave our team a tour of their facilities, and we were really just blown away by the incredible heroic work that they're doing every day. They treat everyone with dignity, and their research is seeking and finding real solutions for everyone around the world. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at camh.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's amazing the things that we tell ourselves to talk ourselves out of getting help. Anybody who's actually gotten help knows that the process of getting things off your chest, of taking your stressors, your problems, and just like not letting them be bottled up, working through just conveying them to somebody, half of the battle is just doing that. You unburden yourself. And you know what? If you have a real mental health professional, no, they don't have magic bullets or magic words that make it all go away. But often they can help you see things a little bit differently and guide you to strategies or tools or to a new perspective that actually does help. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Because you listen to this podcast, you get 10% off of your first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. FreshBooks.com is my exclusive sponsor. If you've been thinking about using FreshBooks for your invoicing, but you haven't gotten around to it, this is a really good time because the new year is coming and FreshBooks is really powerful come tax time. It's really easy to figure out how much you made and how much HST you collected. So when you're doing your 2014 taxes the next spring, you'll have everything on FreshBooks. Check it out, FreshBooks.com.
Somehow I didn't know that you thought of yourself the way that was like a dark time or a miserable time.
What do you mean?
Like you're manic, so the fact that you worked like crazy just seemed to be a part of your personality, and the fact that you would like every now and then break down. When you were with Metro Morning, I just thought like, oh, that's the wrong place for you.
But, I mean, I loved Metro Morning.
Yeah.
Well, I think that it takes a lot for me to care about something. And so, as much as, like, here's the thing. I moved around a lot when I was growing up. I've never had a sense of, like, I've never been patriotic for Canada. I've never invested emotionally in a city. So to be doing, so for my first job out of university, for it to be Chase producing on, like, a local morning radio show, I was, like, interested in telling stories and interested in, like, being a journalist, but I could never really get interested in like local stories because I kind of didn't have a sense of locale. Like I didn't care enough about the city that I was living
in. Right, you weren't rooted in Toronto.
No.
No, I mean, you're not somebody who's interested in municipal Toronto issues.
No. I remember being like terrified when like, you know, there was a municipal election or something was happening on city council because I felt like I didn't even know what a city councilor did. I was just like muddling my way through. I liked human interest stories, but when it came to actually like what the city was doing in order to be a city, like in order to run functionally as a city, I didn't give a shit.
Yeah. And the feel-good multiculturally Metro Morning, like this is Toronto shit, did not seem like your kind of shit.
Well, it just felt like, it felt forced. I mean, I remember when we were like trying to figure out, there was a moment at Metro Morning where all of the producers were supposed to say, like, what cultural group they wanted to cover. Like, we were all supposed to make a particular effort to...
So everybody had to pick up their hand and be like, I'll do the Somali.
I'll do Sri Lanka.
Who did you pick?
I was like, I want the Jews. And they were like, that's not a cultural community. I had just become friends with you, and I think I had gone to, like, your parents' house. And I was like, whoa, there's all these Jewish people in this part of Toronto. I want the Jews. They were like, the Jews are not a culture in Toronto.
And you were going to be the chronicler of the Jews in Toronto.
Let me tell you.
The Shiksa, wanted to tell the Jewish story.
I've seen their
But
people.
Was disallowed from doing that because... you guys apparently aren't a cultural group.
You are until you're successful enough that you're not.
Right.
And then you're just, so, and then when I met you there, you rapped.
Oh, right. I mean.
Like on my first day at work at the CBC.
I just did a little
You sort of followed me down the hall and rapped.
I followed you down the hall rapping Young MC's Bust a Move because you were the only other person who was like around my age and didn't seem like a total square.
Yeah.
And for some reason, like my misguided attempt to make you my friend was like, I'll just follow him down this hall. Well, rapping Young MC's Bust a Move, and maybe he'll be interested in becoming my friend.
It was guided.
I guess it was guided. I mean, it worked.
Yeah.
You're here now 10 years later, so.
Wow.
You seem completely ill-suited to being there, besides the fact that you liked Andy Berry and he liked you.
Yeah.
And the part of it that made sense was that it was this daily adrenaline-filled rush.
Yes.
To... get the show done, and then you wipe the slate clean and start again.
I absolutely related to that part. Like the deadline, I mean, I remain a person who works very well with a firm and terrifying and irretrievable deadline, and I like that aspect of it. But when it came to municipal politics or the thing that's going to get the 7:15 slot on Metro Morning, which is like the big news slot, I felt like, you know, completely out of my element most of the time. Maybe because I wasn't possibly because I wasn't smart enough. Like,
or socially conscientious. You're not like a community person, you know, like people can like get excited about what the garbage cans in Toronto are made of and other people can't. And they're both right, you know.
Yeah. It was also a shop that was like propriety and everybody like keeping like knowing their place and acting in a certain way was important to everyone but you. And you seem to have this sort of saving grace of like you were kind of tone deaf to office politics, but you were pretty damn good at your job.
I mean, I didn't feel like I was good at my job because I felt like a lot of the feedback that I was getting was that I was tone deaf to office politics. But I always knew that I at least was a hard worker and that I was a good writer. I knew that I was a good writer.
Yeah.
I knew that I was a hard worker and I knew that I had at least enough interest, like a general curiosity, which is like what I loved the most about Andy Berry was that when I was working with him, you know, at that point he was in his early 60s, that man had an unwavering curiosity about everything. And like that for me, that's the only way that you can become and remain an interesting person is to be interested. And so I knew I had enough of like an interest in things to be okay at my job.
That was sort of your killer app was like as a Chase producer, you were aggressive in a way that is uncommon in public radio.
Right.
Like, if you wanted somebody on the show, you would, like, you were in people's face in a way that most people at CBC are not.
But I was also, like, I was, like, the one person who, you know, was on a week-to-week contract. So if I didn't perform properly, they could be like, sorry, kid, your time's up. Now go be in a garbage can for the rest of your life. Because there is, you know, like, where else do you go? If you're at, like, local, if you want to be a journalist, which I did at that point, where else are you going to go to do? And I loved radio. Like I love radio. Yeah. So I was like, well, where else am I going to go if it's not this? So I was hustling so hard because if I didn't make my shot with Metro Morning at that point, you know, having only been a couple of years out of school, like where else was I going to go? So I was, I was motivated by fear primarily.
Yeah. But we put ourselves in the relationships that we seek. And that kind of idea that CBC was a boyfriend who could dump you at any moment was something that was kind of like, in a weird S&M lockstep with, like,
you're with my dating history.
I think you kind of like want the world to be judging you and finding you to be like, you know, worthy or not. You know, and not get too comfortable on like a weekly basis or something.
It's your aversion to getting married. Yeah. You know, you're kind of
like I want you to be with me because every day you choose me, not because we've entered into a contract.
You want to enter a 3-year contract.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
A pretty one for one
trip. I want a day to day contract with you. Yeah. I want every day for you to be like, see you later, kid.
I'm gonna fire you. I can fire you any week. But
yeah.
You keep bringing me these stories. So. All right. One more week, kiddo.
This was my fear when I was going contract to contract, was that it's actually a good system for getting work out of people. Mm-hmm. Like, for all my moaning and bitching about how this is just, like, such unfair labor practice, they did keep me on my toes, you know? And I was like, I always wanted to please them because every 3 months, and they would forget. Like, I would be like, don't they realize my contract's coming up? And it would be, like, 2 days beforehand, and I would be like, they haven't said anything, so maybe they don't want me back. And in fact, they just hadn't even considered it until...
Oh my God, it was 11th hour stuff.
That was around the point, Burrell, where you were just having like regular breakdowns, unhappy with like interpersonal stuff, like all like office dynamics stuff.
Right. I mean, I was like, I got a shot to help create, you know, a national radio show, which ended up happening, which was Q. And I had just finished a book proposal too. So like basically when I got
You're omitting my central role in this where I was like, you should go do this. You should like clear. It was so clear. Like, why are you doing newsy stuff?
Are you my maker? Oh, you're the one who was like, go do the arts and culture program on CBC radio.
It's possible you might have done that without me urging you to.
Right. I remember having full agency, but if you want to call yourself my maker,
and given that I have no recollection of actually like making introductions or suggesting, you know, and that happened independently of me entirely, it's possible.
I remember crying outside of my front door. We'd either like biked home from the CBC one day and it was cold. I think it was November. It was 2006, and I had like just broken up with somebody. And I was doing a big sort of like life reassessment. And I remember being outside of my house with you, and I was crying about, you know, whatever one cries about when one is 26, but like mainly the fact that like maybe I was kind of on the right path but not quite on it, and feeling a sense of existential dread or whatever, and you were like, you're like, change it. Like, you have an opportunity to change this. And then either around that time or exactly at that time, there was the opportunity to help develop, you know, what ended up becoming Q.
There was no great insight into this. Like, you were...
I was just crying all the time.
You were interested
like,
in
hey.
Comedy and indie rock scene stuff, and you were not interested in Metro Morning topics. I'm like, right. Why are you at that show and not at that, right. You know? So if there was, like, a cultural show, it seemed like a better place for you.
For sure. Yeah. Which, like, you know, and I think that what ended up happening was, as that show was being developed, I was simultaneously finishing up a book proposal, and... you know, I thought that because I'd basically been a bureaucrat right out of college, you know, working for the public broadcaster and, you know, getting sort of high on daily deadlines and having people judge me and potentially throw me in the garbage at the end of every day. And I felt,
I'm not sure that meets the description of a bureaucrat.
Vivified by that. Oh yeah, I guess it doesn't. I don't know. Yeah, like Graham always calls me a bureaucrat because I worked for the CBC for so long. So I was imagining myself in like a brown suit and like Joe versus the Volcano.
I just come from like a scene that has no comparable level of safety that you had. When you're in Toronto, you were like, I've got a salary, I'm making this
well,
money.
When I met you, I had a salary and a dental plan, and like I was getting my head shrunk every week, and that was covered, and that was really nice, and all that sort of thing. The realization was dawning on me that I was like, oh, maybe instead of asking or being the person who, you know, writes the scripts that have the questions that a host will ask, like, maybe I want to be the person who will eventually be interviewed.
With Q...
Yeah, that piece of pizza you just swallowed is going to be the most disgusting part of the podcast.
I'm right in everyone's ear right now with that piece
disgusting.
Of...
It's a little, the least.
Should we tell
it?
It's pepperoni, mushroom, green pepper from a...
But why green? Like, why green pepper? Green pepper.
Oh, that's
be...
great. That's all Graham's doing. Graham's been trying to like sell me on green pepper.
It's a very underrated vegetable. I mean,
yeah,
it basically is the taste of Betty Crocker if you think about it. Like, it's an '80s vegetable.
I have Graham's never heard parents, anybody defend green pepper.
Graham's parents owned the northernmost taco stand in North America in the 80s, Taco Time in Fort McMurray, Alberta. And I feel like a lot of your formative food experience was wrapped up in like a taco chain in the 80s in Fort McMurray.
Is Taco Time in Edmonton and Calgary as well?
I believe so, yeah.
It's in California too. I went to a Taco Time.
No.
Yeah?
Where
did I...
There might be something called Taco Time.
No, but... I went to a Taco Time in Sandy, Oregon when I was at that wedding.
Yeah, they made their way as Oregon
exists.
And...
Can I have that crust?
Yeah, you can have that crust.
Great.
Green pepper is garbage.
Yeah, I think it's garbage too.
For me, I mean, it's most flavors are about nostalgia, and I think green pepper is clearly nostalgic.
Yeah.
You know.
It's okay.
You're the taco heir of Alberta?
No. They sold that taco stand in... 97. So I've got there's no taco left. I've just got a distant memory, you know, that of like being associated with 90s style
right.
Mexican food. No, white people making Mexican food.
And now you're in LA. So like, are you
super bored by the tacos here generally? You know, I'm
by the amazing rainbow of delicious tacos.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm on every street corner for
these like
pennies.
Flour tortillas, or you know, I kind of want the old El Paso crust taco shells. You know, I've got a Betty Crocker throwback kind
of. Yeah, we have like a lot of like Pace salsa in our house.
No, I don't do Pace salsa.
We've had Pace salsa in our house. Yeah. Continue, sorry.
All of this is going to make sense in the end.
Sure.
So with Q. And we won't talk about Gian because you don't want to talk about Gian, right? We're not going to talk about Gian?
No, there's nothing to say about Gian at this particular juncture.
Okay. What was interesting to me was that you were in constant contact with, like, very famous people.
Sure.
And you were chasing them, pre-interviewing them, shepherding them around town when they came, often hanging out with them.
Yeah.
There were certain people who you were like Bill Buford. It wasn't just about, like you were very interested in celebrity and fame.
Yeah.
But not for its own sake.
I mean, I was interested in people who were doing good work, and I was interested in the type, you know, like Bill Buford is a great example because, you know, I've been a fan of his writing for, you know, more than a decade. He wrote one of my favorite culinary memoirs ever called Heat. And when I met him, he was like the world's best guy. And I was like, oh, how do you become the world's best guy, write one of the best cooking memoirs I've ever read, do a cool book circuit, being a rad dude, having produced a really great piece of art, and, you know, that it was, like, journalistic and also artistic, and I was like, I wanted on that grift.
So like your celebrity interest was based on like it was all recon.
It was it was recon and aspirational. I was like, yeah. how you know?
Because so many people are interested in being your celebrity so they can brag about it or just sort of like,
it was fire.
But you're like actually like, give me some pointers.
Well, it was like, I think that you get to the point when you're at a party and everyone's talking about, like, if it's the year of Deadwood, everyone's, like, at the party talking about how amazing Deadwood is, and then you're, you know, at the party where everyone's talking about how amazing Six Feet Under is or Breaking Bad, and I was like, I would much prefer to not be at the party and be doing, hopefully at some point, the work that at some point down the line, maybe when I'm 60, people are like, man, Catherine Burrell wrote that, a cool thing that everyone at the party is talking about.
That old lady, Catherine Burrell.
That old tree. That fat old lady did that cool thing when she was sick, you know, like that.
Yeah, yeah.
That just became of interest to me instead of you know, being the secondary or the tertiary in my case, which was like, you know, you had, and you were the one who broke that down for me. It's like you've got the creative primaries who are making the books and the paintings and the television and the films.
Right.
You've got the creative secondaries who are, you know, the Gian Gomeshi role, which is the person who is interviewing the person about their creative pursuits. And then you had me, the creative tertiary, writing the scripts for the person who was going to talk to the creative right. primary.
And then you had quaternaries like me who are like Googling like, oh, there's an interview with this Bob Odenkirk from 1997. And I'm like, oh, you haven't read it?
You're,
I don't trust
go
you anymore.
Go kill yourself now. Yeah,
but your role, Graham, like, you're like, kind of like uncomplicated and like, I want to be like Bob Odenkirk. Like, that's my goal is to be like comedy writer or an on-camera comedy presence. And your thing was kind of like, you found a way to be very close, Catherine, to famous people, interact with them in a way that was like, let's talk about your work. And then they come to town and you'd be like, hey, let's get a drink. And you would carry on correspondences with them afterwards, but I think it was kind of like this kind of hard lesson to you of like that there wasn't upstairs downstairs to it all.
Sure.
That like you could be around them, they could have conversations with you.
Yeah.
But they're not gonna be like,
here's the golden ticket, kid.
Yeah, like, you've shown me that you should be me.
No, I mean, God, like, I don't know if I ever actually felt that way. There was probably like at some point in my late 20s where I had the misguided notion that, you know, someone that I met would be like, come and be my assistant and I'll teach you everything I know. Like, but
even
like,
that, like Lady Gaga's assistant isn't the next Lady Gaga.
No, Lady Gaga's assistant is like the next Lady Gaga's assistant Lady Gaga falls out of favor.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, Lady Gaga's assistant is the next Steven Spielberg's assistant. You know,
yeah.
Like, it's like,
yeah.
Yeah. It's
yeah.
Attractive.
No, like I think in a way I feel like that's actually what prevented me from going crazy when we first moved to LA was I knew that the proximity to fame, and again, it's not even that I wanted fame. All I've ever wanted to do was be paid to write. When I say I am a writer, I just want to be like, I always got paid to write.
That's horseshit. All you wanted was to be paid to write? I think you are so much hungrier than that. That's such bullshit.
Totally agree. I mean, come on.
Totally agree.
Like, you probably had, like, thoughts of, like, I could be Lady Gaga. You know?
No,
like,
that's not true.
I'm saying, like, weird thoughts. Like, I have a stand-up comedian friend who's, like,
I wanted to be a recognized writer. I'm going
like
to have to kill myself
like a bigger
after
guy,
this interview.
And he's, like, he confessed to me and was, like, I kind of, like, realized I wanted to be Daniel Craig. You know, it's really just like, that's really what I want.
Go on.
I want to be Steve McQueen. And it was like a really honest thing for him to confess, but like, you know, I don't think you're being that you know.
Like, I don't think you wanted to be famous for the sake of being famous, or, you know, I think it did matter to you what you were making.
Very
much.
So, you know, my
to
very
point
good...
where I don't think it's actually enough for anybody who pursues that. Like, the stories about Peter Zowski being crazy, or, like, you know, he got to interview everybody. But Peter Zowski, when people who've met him talk about him, are like, he was fucking nuts, you know, like...
Yeah.
Because he got so close to the source and never got to be the source.
Right,
know?
Right.
So I think that, like, you
but
can
that's,
pursue
that,
it
that's like an enduring role that fame is not, you
right,
know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Letterman has lasted longer than every, like, president, you know, like, he's gotten to interview all these presidents, but Letterman's reign has not ended, you know. So it can be superior to
neither
the
has Charlie
source.
Rose's. I mean, you like you can become a celebrity journalist definitely. Mm-hmm.
But maybe not. Maybe not in Canada.
But like David Letterman is like he is a comedian and an artist comedian. I think Charlie Rose is really great at his job and really great at asking questions. I don't think that like Charlie Rose, I don't think he is an artist. I don't even give a shit about who is an artist and who is not. And if anyone ever catches me calling myself an artist, I would like someone to fucking execute me in the street. Cause,
don't do that.
Because I really just do.
Once a week, you like accidentally refer to yourself as an artist.
No, that is not true. I definitely don't do that. But no, I mean, I'm interested in like being a really hard worker. And in a way, I would love like my ideal situation is, you know, I'm sitting at a restaurant eating and someone's like, hey, you're Catherine Burrell.
You want to be rudely interrupted.
I want to be like rudely interrupted, but like once every couple of months by someone being like,
you're like, I mean, what did Lou Reed, what's the lyric? I wanted all of it. Like Sheila wrote about you that you're a person who lives without her clothes on. Mm-hmm. Your ambitions are so naked and bold. And it's not to be reductive about it or to make it base. I think you absolutely want to be regarded as a genius artist. I think you're absolutely want that.
No, but like you know, talk about like these things you want, and those are like those are the things you aspire to want.
Isn't that what everyone wants? Jesus Christ!
You aspire to want something healthy. You know, like, oh, I just wish I could, like, want, a blue-collar existence as a writer. But what you actually want is this, like, kind of sublime King Louis XVI craziness.
No. I want to, like, basically not wait in a line. Like, that's what I want. I want to write. I want to make an okay amount of money. And then I want to have, like, at some point somebody be like, I want everyone in the line to be like, who the hell, why is she getting in before us? And the velvet, and then the, yeah, like I want everyone to be mad at me as someone like, just open the velvet rope and everyone's like, why is that shithead getting into the club? And I'm like, you don't know.
Why? This goes beyond actually me saying like, you're a bureaucrat. I actually think you're like a fascist. It's like, and the CBC building trains you to thinking fascistically because that building is such a, like monument of like you know it's just sort of like you are small the institution is large so I think you know between that and your hotel upbringing you're kind of like
so you think I took like an oppositional stance based on me always being part of a very large institution.
You distinguish yourself from the plebes in this way that this interesting.
Ah, come on.
But, you know, and you were working for somebody who basically like the conceit was he didn't want the audience to know that you existed.
Sure. Yeah, that's definitely true.
Right.
That's true. Yeah. I definitely felt like I'm trying to find like the analogous like Wizard of Oz reference here, but yeah, definitely. Like All of them.
You're the lion, the tin man, and the scarecrow.
The conflict in the time before I left for LA was that I wanted to be recognized, you know, because I guess I'm an egomaniac. Possibly,
I think it's fair to like admit that like I just wanted many like, of us egomaniacs. I mean,
I just wanted to like be recognized for the portion of like the part
you
that
keep
I played
phrasing
in there.
I just wanted. Like you're bargaining with fate. Like you actually want quite a bit. And if you got some of these modest things that you're suggesting, my guess is you would still want more.
Yeah.
I think we all believe in accumulation theory.
But you came to America because you're like wanting more is like super customary here.
Wanting more is great here. Like you get rewarded for wanting more here, and whereas in Canada, like, I felt like you weren't rewarded. You were like, don't get too big for your britches, dummy.
Yeah, the tall
we'll kill
thing.
You.
And this is not to say that you had kind of like, oh, you're just another person who wanted to be famous. Like, while working an insane hour demanding job, you were writing a book in your spare. You were kind of like willing to put in the time.
Oh God, of course. I mean, Jesus, like, you know, there was a point in 2009, like before my book came out where, you know, I would go to work for like 9, 10, 11 hours a day. And then I would come home, I would take a pill of Dexedrine and I would go and run the stairs of Casa Loma. And then I'd come home and like edit and write for another like 4 or 5 hours. And they were.
So you're also engaging in like physical narcissism where you're like, I want to look good.
I feel like this is an ambush.
Look, you invite ambush. You're more fun than me. seeing me on the defense is really unpleasant because I just leave. And you like stick up for yourself, so it's
well, great. Kind. Well,
since I've known you, there was like a series of goals. It was like I don't want to be at Metro Morning. I want to be this other show. You achieved that.
Right.
And the show was a wild success.
Right.
And then it was like, I don't want to be tertiary. I want to be primary. I'm going to write a book. Mm-hmm. And you wrote a book. It was about as successful as a Canadian comic memoir
can get. It was nominated for the Leacock and did not win it.
Right. But it's like, as a first effort, it's like, that suggests like, oh, you are now a primary and not a tertiary.
Sure.
You can write the next book and the next book. In between, you could be like a person who is called on to write columns and magazine articles and to, you know, make TV appearances and be funny.
Okay.
And you could have like a Canadian existence as a, there's still a role for a funny female Canadian.
But I think in Catherine's case, the next book would just be a plateau. It'd just be another book.
Yeah.
You know, so she was looking to up one more.
Yeah.
And like, maybe you go like Shonda Rhimes'
road. It's going to sound like a little bit like, I mean, whatever, this is going to sound stupid and pat, but it's like, I really am aware of when I've stopped learning in a situation, and I know that the only good thing I can do in this life in terms of like work is write, because that's all I've ever done. And so every time I hit a wall in terms of my interest in the subject matter that I was writing in or the form itself, I tried to do another form so that I could learn something new. I you know, there's that great Dave Chappelle skit about Wu-Tang Financial, and he's like, you got to diversify your bonds. Like, I always took that as like, right, I've got to diversify my...
But that's not how it ended. There was another word in there, I'm sure of it.
But it's like...
Darn it.
You diversify your bonds.
Fellas.
Darn it.
Friends.
Buddies. I am interested in, like, making sure that there's a diversified enough skill set there so that I'm never, like, left...
A diversified skill set?
No, that's not...
Your motive is just so full of shit.
Your motive is just like, you're a mountain climber, you know? We still have the fucking... gear in the closet. You're like, you just want to do the next thing. That's fair, you know, like you...
Everyone's going to hate me. Like, I already all of your listeners are going to be like, everyone's going
to
hate me so much. Thanks for saying that.
Yeah. As someone who's...
Please like
you,
me.
You sort of achieved something, and then I was really perplexed because you kind of abandoned it.
What did I achieve?
You achieved a certain kind of like stature as a published author of humorous... nonfiction in Canada,
right.
A perch from which you could continue to do more of the same.
Right.
And you were like, not interested. You know, and you sort of involved yourself in a completely other world of like, now I'm interested in comedy and comedy writing for television and television writing.
Drama
whatever
writing,
whatever chips.
I mean, drama, yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, what it was like, I think I listened to what I was consuming.
And comedians.
I really liked a lot of comedians. No, but like, I think that I was listening to what I was consuming. And in the early 2000s and mid 2000s, I was primarily consuming, you know, books and comic memoirs and that kind of thing. I was raised on radio. I consumed a lot of radio before I got into radio. I consumed a lot of the types of books that the book that I wrote. I consumed a lot of that form before I wrote the book. And then I listened to myself in my late 20s, early 30s, and I was like, I love television. All I want to do is sit down and blitz out on Breaking Bad or whatever.
And Swingers, you work so hard to get into a party, you arrive to the party and be like, that's
bullshit.
Anyhow.
Yeah.
Once you arrive at a, it's the whole thing. Once you arrive to an event and you're like, oh, this isn't that special. What's still special to
me? Yeah.
And that's why...
The next shit. To the idea that you're just sort of climbing for the sake of climbing, each progressive step, the step from Metro Morning to Q was more of an honest gesture towards who you are. The step from producing for Q to writing your own book was like there is a trajectory that seems like a path of truth and...
But
you're getting increasingly honest with yourself where, you know, as for so many people... What they do is they start from a place of like where they hope to be, but don't understand the steps that are required from A to B, and as a result, never make it to B.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're sort of like, I want to be like, think about all the things Nora Ephron did before she became Nora Ephron.
Sure.
Most people are just like, I want to be Nora Ephron. And then they just shuck and jive trying to be Nora Ephron, like writing the movie that she wrote once she was great. But they don't go through the steps.
Forgetting that she like was a journalist for a really long time, and then it was offered a column, and then she rejected the column because she felt that she wasn't ready. And
I know so many like actors in Toronto who want to be stars, but they are not willing to even audition for a commercial to pay their bills. So as a result, they're just working some job, you know, and they ultimately languish there.
They can't put their vanity down. They can't humble themselves and like make their bones.
Yeah.
I just always wanted to make sure that I had enough money to live on. Like this is genuine, and you guys can like shoot me down if you want to and call bullshit on it, which you will in a moment, I'm sure. But like, I felt like I always knew how I could get enough money to live. And like, and it wasn't just like pay for my apartment. It was like, you know, pay for the stupid amounts of wine that I wanted to buy every week and pay for the dumb dinners that I wanted to like treat my friends to and that kind of thing. And I always felt like I knew how to monetize my creative predilections in a way that matched what I wanted to spend on myself and my pals and all that kind of stuff. And so
that, and I mean, that's like magic. I mean, if you're like, I can conjure myself and my words and my thoughts into money for my appetites.
I always wanted to have enough money for my appetites, and my appetites have always been great. And that's
the rarest
it.
Thing like, in the world is the practical artist. They're like, it's such a, these two words don't go together very often. Mm-hmm. Because usually people are like, I'm just like painting a smile and hopefully it'll go for $1 million one day. You know, and it's like, and so many people just wait in that moment. And sometimes people launch from 0 to 100 and it works. And everyone's like, see? And they model their lives after this crazy abstract like goal.
I want to know who painted that smile.
You know what I mean, though. You know, like the kind of like, like, who just jumped from 0 to 100 and you're like, see, like, Keela in a lot of ways did that. She was sort of like,
that is that's totally.
But there was
untrue.
Like 10 years.
No, there was 10 years. She's a terrible example.
Weird because you know Sheila Hedy had a kind of instant successful debut with the Middle Stories. Like,
but that's not true. She wrote the Middle Stories from the age of 15 to 24. Like,
but she didn't do like this is what like I think most of my friends are modeled after the Sheila Hedy model of success, which is like, become great. Just be great until someone finds you. Be great, being great. But what you did was like, I'll do what I got to do in the middle.
I feel like super uncomfortable with even like talking about Sheila that way because she is literally the world's hardest worker. So like there was not like she was
I'm saying these
magicked into a vaunted position. Like
we're like you know, kind of in the holding pattern, waiting to become great. They're hard workers. They're not lazy. They're like working hard. They're doing like 4 shows a week, doing stand up everywhere they can go, but they're not doing the middle steps. And this is a distinction in terms of like two approaches, and they're both fucking totally work, which is like you can just be who you're going to be and wait till the world notices, or you can like make do and take like sort of a blue collar approach and, you know, work your way through the system and make a living. Because like when you were working at the CBC, you're around this whole artist community. Most of us were all like totally impoverished and we just couldn't pay our bills. And you're like, I could buy everybody dinner. You're buying everybody dinner at Sneaky D's or whatever. It wasn't like you were buying like $2,000 dinners. You had like a $50,000 income. You know, it's not like you were like a crazy baller. You were just a baller relative to everybody else who was fucking, I'm one of those people, fucking broke the whole time, you know?
You had like a very admirable work ethic. Like, it was always very important to you to kind of like be institutionally recognized and like be like gainfully employed. But that's funny.
I only ever wanted to be the subject of Destiny's Child, independent woman. That's all I ever wanted.
But it's so funny to hear you bargaining with like your dreams now. Like, even back then you were like, guys, if I get like, if I sell the film rights to my book, I'm totally taking all of us on a trip to the Dominican Republic. the Sneaky D's of vacation.
It's true. It's true.
All inclusive cappuccinos for free.
That had to do more with like the fact that I feel like I've always wondered about my value as a person. So I was like, maybe I can keep all my friends by the promise of me buying them a trip to the Dominican Republic.
Graham's raising an interesting thing, which is like a comedian is sort of like dedicated to the craft, honing it and working for years to get your 5 minutes. It was always much more scattershot of like, what exactly is it that you're driving at? If there was an opportunity to like host for Vice TV, you're like, I'll try that out.
Sure.
You know, whatever came up, you would give it a shot.
My MO was always like, say yes to every opportunity that falls into your lap. Like, it's the improv game. It's just like, never say no and see what happens. And
you were like a bizarre rabid unicorn at the CBC. Like, you were so strange in that environment. You played by your own rules there in a way that would have gotten so many people fired instantly. It was like, she's incredibly inappropriate and foul-mouthed and sexual and just like culturally out of step, yet she's sort of like our most productive worker who books the most stuff and gets the most gets. And writes the best copy. We like, how could we get rid of her? And she's well liked, but it's but there's like a liability issue of what lawsuit is going to originate from this. And, like, they were just like in a state of constant.
Did
like,
they really want to get rid of you? Or, to, like,
I don't think that anyone wanted to get rid of me. I mean, I definitely got like wrapped on the knuckles for my behavior.
I shouldn't say that.
Yeah.
I think you made people very, very nervous.
I think that
I don't think you ever had an enemy who was trying to get rid of you. And I can't say that about myself.
Right.
But I think you made people very nervous. It was just a complete culture clash of who you were and what that place was.
Yeah, I feel like I was doing a tightrope thing, possibly. But like again, you know, I was also like very young. I started working at the CBC when I was like 23 years old. So, like, what else? I was just doing what I thought was correct, and I don't know. Again, like I feel like I definitely was without guile during those years. Like I wasn't planning to be like this crucial member of the CBC community who was, you know, making a terrible fist fucking joke in the middle of a story meeting and being like, this is my cred. Like, they can't fire me because who else is going to say this shit? I was just kind of like,
I was making it up as I went along.
Yeah. But like, as most of us are doing, I think, when we're in our early to mid 20s, when we have like the hubris of youth and we, are excited about stuff.
I was
quiet,
sitting cross-legged in my bachelor apartment.
In your brown corduroy suit.
Plotting the future. Like, I generally don't think that a lot of us are actually out there sticking our necks out and doing things. And I think people are like continuing the mentality of being in university, which is like, I'm a person in a state of pure potential and, you know, imagining yourself. But you're
right. And then trying to reconcile that with like, what is.
With
and
like, when you're yeah, like, being like, I 30, can't afford like, a falafel. Oh, shit. You know? So you're like, you had, by virtue of having kind of like, not less self-esteem, but like you were less self-aware, were then had you're kind of in a better position generally, because those of us who are just like, I'm a movie star, nobody knows it yet. There's so many people like this, or whatever, I'm a blank star and no one knows it yet. They're sitting there and they're like, their lives contradict it directly, but you were like, I'm a rock star who is...
No, I think it has to do with the fact that...
I apologize
that, like,
for using the term rock star.
No, that's awful. Yeah, no one wants to hear that term in 2013.
Should be ninja.
Yeah, or unicorn or robot. No, I mean... not to bring it back to like my you know initial formative trauma, but it's like, you know, I had a bad car accident where I erased a life in 2001. I became after I got out of my depression from that, I became hyper aware of how fucking absurd.
You accidentally killed a guy.
I accidentally killed somebody, and I feel like once I got out of that depression, I was like, this is ridiculous. Like we can be erased so quickly because
yeah,
I did that to somebody.
Too seriously.
They'll let us like not really look too hard at what we're doing because it's absurd. And I feel like that's been a guiding principle for me.
Yeah.
It's just like,
but it's such a, you're so odd because it's this weird mixture of like a demand to be free and to live life on your own terms and also a demand to be judged. And it's sort of
you're not exactly like Kurt Vonnegut's kid who went to raise goats in Jamaica. You know, like you still are engaging in the world like and expecting.
And even seeking out places that are very judgmental. Judgmental.
Yeah,
seeking systems that are like CBC, like the list of who's staff and who's not and who's in and who's not. But you even kind of like outgrow your judges and you're like, I don't want to be judged by the CBC's terms anymore. I'm going to be judged by the literary world's standards.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, you're like, the Canadian literary world? Who are you to judge me?
Right.
And then you came here to Hollywood,
right,
which is sort of like the like here is where they really judge.
Yeah.
These are the judges. And like you've kind of like chosen a life where you are splaying yourself out for judgment, pitching these very personal stories.
You know, you're seeking God and your fellow man. That's about what you're up to. Because you, in the moment of your accident, you're like, I became, you know.
I think that we're friends in a sense because, like, I'm incredibly judgmental and you dig it.
Oh, no, I mean, like.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah.
No, I mean, you know, I mean, definitely.
That explains my relationship with her in a huge way, you know.
For
like,
sure.
You're like.
Like I surround myself with like intelligent people who are discerning and who will like rake me over the coals when I deserve it, and even when I don't deserve it.
Intelligent comes secondary to the judgmental thing, like not to take you and I down a notch simultaneously, which is like that we're like, it's not that we're intelligent, it's that you just like that you pass through whatever filter we have clearly laid out in front of the world and talk about probably a ton.
Yeah. So. I just want, yeah, I want to be a part of the club where the people who are making the club are like, yeah, but no, the club rules have changed, so you're out. You know, like I'm interested in.
You
in,
saw the what's her name's Oscar speech where like they like me, they really really like me, and you're like she nailed it.
I did not say that when Anne Hathaway said that.
It wasn't Anne Hathaway.
Well, Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, there was
that was like a reference to. The
oh, that was a reference. Yeah, that's right. That was a reference to Who's. It was
some awful.
It was
annoying.
So was terrible. It?
Sarandon something.
I mean, not Susan Sarandon.
No, it wasn't Susan Sarandon. No.
Some dewy eyed. She's still famous. I don't know.
It's not Goldie Hawn. It was somebody.
No.
Yeah.
Let's just Google it.
Anyway. Wait, but how did I relate to that?
You were like, in my mind, you're like, she's right. They like her. You know, and you didn't
but
say
I mean,
like,
God,
oh, what folly. You know, you said, uh-huh.
I don't think I ever said anything. I think I was like, that speech sucks. I hope that I never am in front of a microphone and say anything that stupid in front of the Academy.
Who you hope
Sally
finally.
Field.
Sally Field, that's right, yeah.
But I feel like if ever you got like, a full and pure validation from me, you would lose all interest in my judgment. And you'd be like, oh, I got into that club. What's a better club?
No, like you're when the greatest compliment you ever gave me was when I got nominated for the Leacock and you were like, congratulations, I'm super jealous of you. And I was like, this is the only time that you've ever admitted you being jealous of me. And I was like, I kept that email for years that I would go back to be like, I would warm my hands on the embers of that email.
I was green and like I felt you should know that at that point.
I am very happy that that moment happened in the tenure of our friendship.
All right.
Are we done?
Oh, we're done with you.
Okay, let's go to Graham. I've been talking too much.
All right, that's Canada Land today. I hope you liked it. Tanara Yelland helps me produce this show. Email me at jesse@jessebrown.ca. Check out the website, canadalandshow.com. There's a new video up there. I'm on Twitter at Jesse Brown. The next podcast will be up on Monday. If you like Canada Land, recommend it. Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.